The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective as we're here on a Sunday night. Thanks for everyone joining us as we're going to be talking Pirate football in the transfer portal. And man, it's been a busy, I don't even know the word offseason is correct, but Kyle from LaGrange Barber, dude, how are you?
Yeah, no, busy early offseason, our signing period, coaching hires, more and more transfer portal pieces joining the program each and every day. So we're going to have the opportunity to be a good football team next year.
No doubt. Let's go to China Grove, North Carolina. And that welcome music by the Doobie Brothers and Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you?
Doing well, guys. Obviously, always enjoy talking Pirate football. And, you know, I guess a month and a half ago now, who would have thought we would be this excited? But due to the acquisitions and moves we've made in the transfer portal, there is a lot of excitement for 2024. And I'm really looking forward to spring ball. I know we'll talk more later as far as season tickets going on sale here in a couple weeks and so forth, but really looking forward to hopefully being able to attend the spring game and maybe even a spring practice and seeing what John David Baker and this offensive staff and the new offensive personnel looks like.
No doubt. Let's go to a man that he hasn't slept since the end of the regular season, the end of the regular season, and he's now in his apartment in the transfer portal. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Semenza. Man, how are you?
What's up, guys? I'm definitely excited about this show because I love talking about the portal, and I love talking about, in particular, these mid-year enrollees that, I think a really nice job by Mike Houston and this staff, and I've been very critical over the last year, but you got to give credit where credit's due. And I think they've done a really nice job, so far. I mean, you're talking about 11 guys out of the portal that most importantly are going to be here for spring ball. They're enrolled in classes. You were able to address a lot of holes and needs. So really happy about what we're doing so far. And like Kyle said, we have a chance to be a pretty good team next year.
No doubt. In fact, I'm really happy. Today is a great day for me, guys, because tonight that Brandon was asking if I am not a Cowboys fan. I'm a Washington fan, so it was a great day.
Dem boys.
Yeah, we probably need to go ahead and begin the show, address the passing of Art Baker.
Oh, yeah, that's no laughing matter. Yeah, that was very sad, but I didn't realize it makes sense. You were talking about earlier, Kyle, about you go, oh yeah, that year, but he was, what was it, 90, how old was he, Bubba? 90 something off the top of my head, and
91, I believe. He was in his early 90s.
Yeah, it makes sense that he was 91. It just
94.
Okay,
yep, he had just turned 94. I want to say it's back in November, so yeah, born in the 20s.
He was very special to me because he was the first coach when I became a Pirate fan. And guys, I would just say this. If you look at, and Bubba, you're the numbers guy, so you probably know this. When you look at his record, the one thing I will say is it doesn't indicate the fact that it wasn't like he was playing, no offense to the teams in the American, but our slogan, as you guys remember me talking about, is we're going after the best. And we're playing Penn State, Miami, Florida State, Florida. I mean, we're playing this ridiculous schedule because we were independent back then. And so I will give credit. Speaking of giving credit where it's credit's due, Matt, I always hate that his record was what it was because not only a great man, he was a good football coach. But when you're playing the likes of that Murderers Row schedule, then you also wonder how many coaches would have a winning record at East Carolina if they had that schedule.
Yeah, it was a who's who of college football schedule. Yeah. Obviously, major 1A Southern Independent as it was at the time, and You think about the teams, not only in the South, but just on the East Coast. You had the likes of Florida State, Southern Miss, South Carolina, Penn State, just to name a few, and just so many excellent 1A independents.
Miami, Syracuse. In those
years, Miami, yeah.
West Virginia.
That was back before the Big East, before obviously Florida State went to the ACC.
South Carolina.
Et cetera. Yeah, South Carolina, the SEC.
So they went in like 90, was it 92 off the top of my head, something like that?
No, the Big East.
I'm sorry. I was thinking of Arkansas. Never mind. When I said that, I knew that was wrong. But Art Baker, very sad. And I just wanted to mention that because I know people want to, some of our older fans want to like put that on him. And I don't think that's fair. I know it's the results business. I'm not trying to have a debate over that. I'm just saying that give respect. He was a great coach. Not only that, but he had a lot of faith. He was a big time Christian guy. Had a lot of respect for him. In fact, the very first game I went to was FCA Day, and he had those of us that were local kids from Eastern North Carolina down on the field, and I won't give the story, but he gave a great testimony, and I'll share that maybe at another time. But there was a player for that time, I'm so old, it was a St. Louis Cardinals before they moved to Arizona, named Stump Mitchell. And so it was a great story there. But anyway, Art Baker, rest in peace. And I'm very appreciative of what he did for the program, because I do believe, if you guys remember, those guys that were playing for Art Baker eventually played for Bill Lewis. And some of those guys were still on the team that won the Peach Bowl. So glad we had Bill Lewis, obviously. But Art Baker was definitely, I think he's very underrated as a coach as far as his time at East Carolina. But that's just me.
Yeah, as far as Coach Baker is concerned, just a brief bio on him. As we've mentioned, 94 years old, born November 30th, 1929. He began his coaching career coaching the running backs at Clemson back in the mid-60s, 65 to 69, according to what I'm seeing. Then he spent 3 years as an assistant at Texas Tech. And then he got his first head job in 73, was an opponent of East Carolina and the Southern Conference, if I'm not mistaken, 73 to 77. And then also the head coach at the Citadel for 5 years from 78 to 82. Picked up some nice wins at those programs. A picture I saw earlier today that I'll put up on the screen here in just a couple minutes. When he was, I think it was maybe when he was at the Citadel, but when he was at one of those programs, he picked up a win over NC State. Also, maybe a win over, I want to say, South Carolina. And then he was on Ed Emery's staff in 1983. Is OC, but then I had forgotten this. He went to Florida State in 84 before coming back as head coach in 1985, and then had those 4 seasons as head coach, 85 to 88. I think two wins, 5 wins, and then 3 wins. But yeah, in that 87 season when we went 5-6 after starting the year with a 32-14 win over NC State. The final game in that series during the regular season, all the way up until 96. But he had also beaten the Wolfpack in 85, 33-14. But in that 87 season, after starting with that 32-14 win and then winning 5 games, there were another close call or two where it looked like the Pirates may turn the corner, but then regressed to just 3 wins in 88. And then, of course, he was let go and Bill Lewis brought in. But as Dave mentioned, Art Baker and his staff had recruited the likes of Jeff Blake and Robert Jones and several of the key pieces of that Peach Bowl team.
Yeah, and it's always sad to, hear about coaches that, you know, were with us passing away. So Art Baker, rest in peace. And I know that obviously he's the reason why Coach Schenck came here. And Coach Schenck had that picture. Was that on Twitter, guys, when you I guess you guys, so very, or X, I'm sorry.
I'm uploading that right now, and I will share it with our viewers here in just a moment. The one I referenced, as well as that picture, how we found out about the news earlier today with Coach Schenck and his post, because that was the initial staff of the, you know, he served for Coach Baker and then was on Bill Lewis's staff, then Coach Logan, then of course Coach Holtz and Coach Houston. Five different head coaches for which Steve Schenckweiler coached for.
That's just crazy. If you think about, guys, about coaching, not only that you can last long as a coach, but to be under at East Carolina under five different coaches, that's just insane, especially this day and age. You just wonder how many times that actually happens. I've got a trivia question for you guys. I'm going to ask you, and I know you guys probably already know it, but how many coaches in the history of coaching football have won I know Bubba probably knows this, a national championship in college football and a Super Bowl? Do you guys know that?
I can think of two right off the top of my head.
And Shell is right. It's three.
Can I give you two off the top of my head?
Yeah, sure.
Jimmy Johnson, Miami and the Cowboys. Yep. Pete Carroll, USC and the Seahawks. Can't think of the third. Shell. Who am I missing, Shell?
He actually coached for the Cowboys as well. I'll give you that hint.
Aha, from Oklahoma. Barry Switzer. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, Barry Switzer. So it's only three. And I just wanted to throw that out there. It's amazing to think. I know that's the correct answer, but you would think, knowing the Super Bowl and knowing the national championship, I'm not saying it was a high number, but I was thinking before I saw that trivia question, you would think there would be more than three. But Pete Carroll pretty much being pushed out this week.
Why would you think it would be more than three? I'm honestly surprised it is three. I mean, winning a national championship is so hard to do. Winning a Super Bowl is so hard to do. So the fact that three people have done both, I thought the answer was two. Barry Switzer was the one that I also couldn't think of.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Barry Switzer, you could have rolled out just about anybody on that Cowboys team. I mean, they were
amazing.
They were Super Bowl ready. That was one of the best teams of all time. Barry Switzer was not particularly well liked by that Cowboys team. Yeah. They felt like he was too much like the college ways. You know, they were used to being professionals and they didn't really love him, but he did get it done. So you got to.
No question about that. But there's the. For those watching, it's Schenck says, I'm so sad about the passing of Coach Baker, but I'm happy he is with Edie. Thank you for all you've done for so many. And we're obviously rest in peace.
Yeah, and let's be honest. Obviously, anytime you loss of life is very sad, but we should all be that lucky to make it to 94 years old.
Yeah, no doubt. And there we go. And Coach, he was the South Carolina Athletic Hall of Fame coach. That's from the ex from Coach Blake Harrell. He shared that in thoughts and prayers for the Baker family. But Art Baker, we're going to miss him a lot as coach from 1985. It shows up there to 1988 with the Pirates. So thank you, Coach Baker, for all you did for the Pirates, for sure. That's going to be a lot of people that may not know, but one of the things we talked about when we started the show is kind of like the legacy, the people, coaches and players from the past that we would honor them. And we would, for the newer Pirates, we would educate them. And so this is a way that sadly we're doing it with his passing, but some people already knew about Art Baker, but I'm sure the younger listeners and viewers may not. So there you have it, Art Baker.
Go ahead. There you see some of those games that I referenced. You see when he was at Furman as head coach and defeated NC State. It looks like September 4th, 1976. And then in 79, he led the Citadel to a 27-14 win over Vanderbilt.
That's crazy. That's crazy. But Vanderbilt has been bad for so long there. And maybe one day they'll, you know, put football at the top there. We know by education, but certainly Vanderbilt, they do have a great baseball program. We'll give them that for sure. Speaking of which, you guys want to go ahead and we'll get to baseball later, talk a little bit about that. But you guys want to talk about the transfer portal. Matt, I know that it's been a busy time for you. I got to talk to Chrissy. Have you been like the transfer? Has she been like the transfer portal, like widow, where she doesn't get to see you very much?
Yeah, she's like the assistant right now. You know, I mean, I do spend a lot of time in there, but
okay.
You know, I'll tell you guys, you talk a lot about like if you were to give this staff a grade so far for what they've been able to do in the off season, and you know, if you just look at, you know, in particular at transfers, you know, 11 so far, there's two more that are unannounced. So it's going to be 13 by the end of the week. But, you know, really nice job by this staff to address a lot of needs. You know, the quarterback was the biggest one. And by all accounts, we're going to bring in two quarterbacks who were both 4 stars in high school. Obviously address wide receiver in a big way, corner, O-line. So you've really, in a short amount of time, you've really improved this football team. And, you know, I think there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, not only with the quarterback situation, 4 stars in high school, I really don't mean jack shit to me. But you got a guy that started 7 games at Michigan State, and then a guy that, you know, started the game at Miami, had significant playing time in other games at Miami, before transferring to Missouri to try to win the starting job, never did it. But he's definitely got some ability when he officially signs. So I particularly the quarterback position, and that's the most high-profile position. You know, looks like we should have two good choices there. You would think Hauser or Garcia, one of the two, was going to win the job. And who would have thought, oddly enough, that we're sitting here talking about Garcia again?
I knew when we did a show that you would be the one.
Completely different Garcia. And
we
went from Pinckney to Pinckney. Now we're going from Garcia to Garcia. But we'll see what happens between with him and Hauser. And it's good that we're bringing in.
That is one of those. I think you may have said this, Kyle. Sorry to cut you off. But as far as the unannounced.
Correct. And I said that if he officially signs, and for all accounts, it looks like he will. It's being reported pretty much everywhere, but he hasn't officially committed yet. Silent commitment, if you will. I don't know how silent it is when everybody's talking about it publicly.
And the players actually, and by the way, he's met like the players, so his new teammates. So
yeah, well, you know, you ask Dave, you asked earlier, so Bubba, Matt, probably a good time for you to address this. Dave was asking me earlier my thoughts on the defensive lineman out of Ohio State that's originally from Wake Forest, North Carolina. He from all accounts, what I told Dave, Matt, Bubba, you guys elaborate. What I read, Igo said limited playing time, but when he has had his chance, he's looked well. And they normally don't let you stick around for 3 years at Ohio State if you suck.
That was a great point.
Yeah.
I mean, they have those scholarships, but they're not going to waste scholarships.
Yeah, I was actually saying to Bubba earlier, I kind of see this one from two different perspectives. You could be here's like the first perspective. You could be getting a diamond in the rough because, you know, you could be a really good player, but just be at Ohio State, you could just be passed over by a bunch of 5-star monsters and just not really get an opportunity. So you could have a diamond in the rough, or, you know, you could have a guy who kind of is what he is at this point, and he's really more of a depth piece. You know, I think time will tell exactly what we have in him, but I think it's a really good pickup.
I think he'll at least make the two deep. I have trouble believing if he was 1 year at Ohio State. But you, like I said, they ain't gonna let somebody stick around for 3 years at Ohio State. This sucks. It's just not gonna happen. So that, they've been given a scholarship for 3 years there. I think he's gonna be able to play and make the two deep. I'd be shocked if he doesn't.
Oh, no doubt. And this is great because, Matt, we always talk about Coach Logan saying that defensive linemen don't grow on trees, and we talk about the O-line, but D-line is extremely important. And, man, that defense, oh, my gosh. I know Brandon said they're going to be nasty this year. I agree with you, Brandon. I think they're going to be really good. By the way, Shell, he has 1 year. He has one more year like a grad transfer, so he'll have 1 year left is for his eligibility. Got it easy for me to say, right?
Yeah, and this is Jaden McKenzie, originally from Wake Forest, North Carolina.
Right.
And one of five transfers from the defensive side and one of four who were originally from the state of North Carolina. Taking a look, at Jaden, he 6'3", 6'4", depending on where you see it, so probably somewhere in between, about 285 pounds. As Matt mentioned, you've seen the highlights from the playing time he did get. I want to say he played in about 7 or 8 games this year, 10 tackles, 1.5 for loss, and did some nice things. Made a couple of nice plays late in the game in the fourth quarter against Toledo. Obviously, the Rockets were an 11-win team. I think at the very least, he'll be quality depth and be in that rotation, like Kyle said, in the two deep.
Yeah, and if you're bringing him in at this point, you certainly hope he's going to be able to crack that two deep. And, I think the key with a lot of these guys, and obviously the defense we run here is very different than what they run at Ohio State, but the key to all these guys is that you're getting them in prior to spring football. So not only do they have a chance to go through all your winter conditioning workouts, but I can't say how important that is to be able to get in for spring football. It gives you an opportunity to learn the system, without having to play games. It's huge. It's a huge factor. So like in the past, we've brought in quite a few guys in the summer, and you see that they really struggle to get up to speed in time for the season. But a guy like this, you're going to have him for spring. You're going to have him for all the summer workouts, conditioning. So he definitely has a chance to make an impact.
And this is obviously a position where we were very good in 2023. You lose Jason Shuford and Xavier McIver. They went to Marshall and UT Martin, respectively. So with this addition, you're adding position of need, and you also brought in on the defensive line on the edge. You brought in Raheem Craig, 6'3", 235. Out of Louisville, also originally from the state of North Carolina, in the western part of the state, I believe Alexander Central High School, if I'm not mistaken. I really like the pieces we've added, and as the show goes on, we'll talk about the other three we added on the defensive side, two in the defensive backfield, and then also North Carolina native in linebacker. Damian Wilson from Mizzou. I think Kyle may have referenced him, talking about him being, by some publications, for what it's worth, a 4-star coming out of high school.
Yeah, that's – but I know that we always talk about that, about, I agree to a point. I love Igo, so I'm not trying to diss him. But when I hear about the recruiting, I like to pay attention to the recruiting. But as far as the stars, that means nothing until we have to see how that translates to college. But having said that, have you guys noticed how many guys that were coming out of high school and they're like 4 stars that John David Baker and company are getting with Mike Houston?
Yeah. I mean, I think I think most of these Power Five programs, you know, that's what you see a lot of, is guys that were, you know, four-star, three-star type kids that are now at places like Ohio State or wherever, Louisville, whatever, and, you know, expected to be playing, expected to be making NIL money, and for whatever reason, be it depth, they don't fit in the system, or some, maybe they just suck. Hope not. They haven't worked out, and, you know, you see that film from high school, you see that athletic ability, and you hope that they can produce. And in some cases, you've seen it on the field in college, whether it's been in spot starts or backup roles or whatever. And so getting four-star talent, like I said earlier, four stars don't really mean much to me, but it does show that at least coming out of high school, that they were well thought of to end up at those programs.
No doubt, and we'll have to see how – let's see here. Johnny Robertson, he's always got something great. He said, thrilled with landing. Is that Quayshon Sapp? It would be nice to pair him with Isaiah Foote, who has been in the portal for 6 weeks and has yet to sign. Any chance he could be recruited? He was our best inside offensive lineman.
Well, first of all, I mean, I'll just chime in on that. Quayshon, I hope I'm saying his name right. Quayshon Sapp is, I got to say, man, this is my favorite addition outside of the quarterback. This is my favorite addition in this class because, I mean, this is a kid that we don't normally get at East Carolina. I mean, this is a big body. This is again, you know, not to look back, but this is a four-star recruit out of high school that had offers from everybody in the country, Alabama, Auburn, everybody. So obviously there's talent there. Now you go to a place like Florida State, maybe you don't see that immediate playing time, but the portal gives us an opportunity to get these players that we normally wouldn't have a chance to get. So, you know, it giveth and it taketh, like we talk about. But I'm thrilled with this addition. This is just in a position of need. This is huge. In terms of, you know, Johnny's question about Isaiah Foote, I mean, you never know. Stranger things have happened. I don't see it happening. I mean, I think there's probably a very slim chance of that because by all accounts, he was not in shape for last season and didn't have his best year. So I'm not sure how that all went down at the end. Apologize for the dog in the background, but I think there's probably a very slim chance.
Give a shout out to Carmelo. What's up, bro? the best, let's see. So we have dogs with Kyle and Matt, the dogs of the Sports Objective there. But I want to chime in, get folks to chime in. I know we have some already, but what is your favorite player out of the transfer portal? You can put that on your Facebook comments.
We don't know yet.
You don't know yet?
No.
Yeah. I know. I'm just saying, based on what you've seen, I understand it has to be.
I'm going to be Johnny fan and go Hauser or Garcia, one of the quarterbacks, just because if we don't have a quarterback, we're going to suck no matter what.
That's true. And I think, guys, don't you think, I was telling Kyle on the pre-show in the green room, don't you guys think that when you hear Alex Flynn, he's definitely staying from, you know, like till the spring is what we're hearing. Don't you think that it's pretty much a foregone conclusion? He's probably just staying in the spring, and in the spring he'll most likely make his decision to go to med school then. I know it's speculation, but that's...
I think it depends on how he performs. I don't know. It could be a situation. Maybe he feels loyalty to the team. Maybe it's not even a situation where it's if he does get the backup role, maybe he wants to see, you know, after spring ball, how much the team needs him. You know, if...
Yeah, I'm excited that that Alex staying around. And I don't think he would be staying around the program, you know, if he wasn't truly committed to competing for that job. I mean, you go through too much, and especially now that he's had the taste of being the starter for over half a season and done some nice things, obviously plenty of growing pains as well. But yeah, Alex Flynn is certainly staying around with the intentions of playing some more football for the Pirates on Saturdays. Otherwise, he would just move on, and I like it because I mean he does have he has as much or about as much experience as Hauser and Garcia if that comes to fruition. I like adding each of those guys, and they both started games at very good programs. And had the chance to.
I'll tell you what I wouldn't do, Bubba, and I think I texted you this. I would not announce a starter out of spring ball.
No,
even if I felt like it was definitely going to be Hauser or Garcia, I would tell them, "Bubba, no, we're carrying on the competition into the fall because you don't want anybody transferring out."
Yeah, that's correct.
We need them both. And that's something else with Flynn. You know, at the end of spring ball, let's say Garcia, for example, says, all right, this is Hauser's job. I'm out of here. I'm going to go try to win a starting job at an FCS school. Then, you know, hey, Flynn, could you stick around? So, you know, that there's always those possibilities. Let's hope not, though.
What about Jeter? He's another one I thought about.
Well, Jeter has no experience, but you never know.
Very quickly, before we talk about what else we have in the quarterback room and then the other transfer pieces we're bringing in for Hauser, Garcia, whoever becomes the quarterback to distribute the ball to, give credit to Steve and I go at Hoist of Colors because of what he said. You know, he's obviously had multiple conversations with these guys and has a pretty good feel for things from the standpoint of what their expectations are coming in and so forth. And when one of his subscribers on Hoist of Colors asked him, what he thought as far as, if the one that does not, or what were the odds of the guy who doesn't win the job if it was announced at the end of spring, or, how things are looking coming out of spring ball, he said that he would feel as though, like, if it looked as though Hauser was the starter coming out of spring, that it may be like a 50-50 situation as far as sticking around and going into fall camp rather than transferring to another program, like Kyle mentioned. We shall see.
I hope the coaches are honest with Flynn. Like, don't waste this kid's time. He's got a bright future. He's obviously going to go to medical school. Don't just keep him around for the sake of saying, hey, we have our fourth string quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, if he has a fair chance to compete and win a job, that's great. Give him every opportunity. But if he doesn't, let him do his thing, man. I mean, maybe he wants to go play FCS for a year just to play football. Maybe he wants to move on and go to medical school. I think a lot of times coaches will keep guys around for greedy reasons.
Well, you don't want to end up with it without him.
Just be honest with him and tell him what the situation is, and then he can make the best decision.
You don't want to end up without him or Garcia, assuming Hauser wins the starting job, or Garcia wins the starting job. You don't want to end up without Hauser or Flynn as your backup. That's why you got to be really careful coming out of fall camp, I would say, unless Garcia, for example, could tell it's definitely Hauser's job and he says, I'm out of here. At that point, Flynn maybe was going to go. That's where what I'm saying. If all of a sudden Garcia can see the writing on the wall that it's Hauser's job, you got to make sure you're communicating with Flynn. Hey, we need you now as backup. But if both of them are going to stick around to fall camp, then I would think Flynn is probably going to go on the med school unless it really is a 3-man competition coming out of spring.
No doubt, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, but it's good that we have more quarterbacks this year to talk about. And we haven't even talked about Cole Hodge, who of course is the Gatorade Kentucky Player of the Year. 2 years in a row.
Will he be here? Is he enrolled or will he not?
He is not a mid-year enrollee because of the school he attends. He cannot graduate mid-year. So he will be here first summer session. I'm guessing either first or second summer session.
No spring ball. You can hang up any chance of him winning the starting. Not that he had much of a chance coming in as a true freshman winning the starting job anyway, but you pretty much you can hang that up.
So. I think it's good for him to come in and have work on his college game.
And Alice, forgive me if we've already addressed this, but she said, "Where is Flynn going to med school?" From what I hear, you know, he has intentions of going to Brody School of Medicine.
Yeah,
but of course that could.
Is there any reason he couldn't? Is it just too daunting? And can he enroll at the Brody School of Medicine and just keep playing football?
Yeah,
he could, but it's
that's why he just opted to pursue that MBA in the meantime, just because of the, like you're saying, the daunting task and just everything that med school entails.
And he still has, he's got one more year left of the MBA, right?
I believe that's correct.
I think he's done one year. And he has
not 100% on that.
Yeah, he's not finished. What I'm saying is the point is he's not finished with the MBA. So it's not like he would be starting med school. He wouldn't be starting med school until what, the fall, guys? Anyway, I don't think they do mid-year kind of things. Off the top of my head, I have to check on that. But I think in other words, it's mainly just going to be every fall they start, like with someone with a first-year med student. But our friend John Bream, I'm sure he could tell us, I don't know that to be the case, but we'll see.
But kind of moving on the offensive side of the ball, we've discussed the quarterback room and what a better spot it is in. Without a doubt, we'll have some serious competition there this spring and then progressing into fall camp. But those guys are going to have a lot more weapons to distribute the ball to. A wide receiver, very excited about everything that Chase Sowell did as a freshman. But Chase is going to have some other options around him. First of all, you have Kerry King coming back off the injury. Unfortunately, he got hurt right there not too long before he went to Big House. And I've heard him mention during the offseason that he was recovering nicely and hopefully he'll be back at and beyond where he was entering 2023. But you have Omega Blake coming in from South Carolina, had about 20 or 25 catches for the Gamecocks and made some plays against the likes of Georgia and other big-time SEC opponents. Then a guy, the most proven of the lot, Winston Wright Jr. Shell mentioned him earlier in the chat on either YouTube or Facebook. I appreciate Shell chiming in as always, but Winston, 5'10", 185 pounds, began his career at West Virginia, spent last season at Florida State, had about 5 catches for the Seminoles, but for West Virginia over 3 seasons, accumulated 125 or 130 catches, also took 2 kickoffs to the house, one of which we'll share on our social media against Baylor. And is a real playmaker in the slot. So, and then you're also adding, bringing in Anthony Smith, outside receiver, 6'2", 190 pounds, that runs a legit, 4'3", 4'3", 5'40", kind of a taller Josiah Hatfield, and maybe a little bit more physical, larger body there. And you think about the possibility of Smith and Sowell on the outside and then Wright in the slot or Omega Blake. I think he's more of an outside guy, but a lot of options there, and I like what I've seen on film of those guys.
Did you talk about the tight end from Oregon, the old?
We have not talked about new tight end coming in, began his career as a walk-on. He's the nephew of Jim Kelly, Casey Kelly. I believe actually converted from quarterback to tight end when he walked on at Ole Miss. So he has that relationship connection with John David Baker. During his time at Ole Miss, played about 1,000 snaps over three seasons, caught, I want to say, 25, 30 passes, two or three touchdowns. And then this year had five receptions.
How many touchdowns did you say, Bubba, you cut out?
Three touchdowns at Ole Miss, and then he had a couple more this year at Oregon. So this is a guy that John David Baker had that previous relationship with. He knows what he's getting in Casey Kelly. And again, it's the nephew of Buffalo Bills and Miami Hurricanes great Jim Kelly.
And when you think about all the talent at Ole Miss and Oregon on offense, those numbers don't sound overwhelming. But when you consider where he was playing and the talent that's on that on those two football teams on offense, he's going to come in and you know, we already have you know, a couple good tight ends. He's going to be an impact player, I would think, immediately.
6'3", 255 pounds.
Yeah.
Originally from Niagara Falls, New York.
Yeah, I would expect big things out of him.
Yeah, my big thing with him, too, is what kind of a blocker is he? You know, can he help in the run game? Because, you know, I think we have some tight ends that can catch the ball. You know, obviously Calhoun and the younger guys, I think, are good athletes. They can catch the ball, but nobody really stands out in particular in terms of their blocking prowess. And that's really where we need to make some big strides. So, like, if he can block well, that would be a huge addition to this team. I would imagine at his size, 6'3", 250 pounds, he's going to be able to make an impact in the run game. So, to me, that's even more important than what he can do as a receiver.
Yeah, and with what we aim to do offensively, you've seen enough from him as a receiving tight end that you know he's capable there, and I feel very confident that we would not be bringing him in if he wasn't a very good blocker.
Well, that would be huge because, you know, Bub, I mean, especially when you struggle at tackle, at the tackle position, having a tight end that you can put, you know, next to the tackle and help with the pass rush off the edge is huge. So, yeah, we'll see. But love that addition for sure.
No doubt. And, again, I think with this coaching staff, there was lots of rightfully so overhauls on the offensive side of the ball. And, man, overall, I'm going to go around the horn here, and I'm going to give you what I'm thinking. If you had, I think, Matt, we've talked about this before, but if you had overall grade as of right now for this coaching staff with a transfer portal, I'm going to start with you. What do you think? What do you give this team of coaches, I'm saying, a grade?
I would just say this is probably going to sound overly critical. I would give him a B only because we haven't gotten through spring ball yet, right? And we don't know exactly what we have. But a B is a very high mark. The only thing preventing me from giving an A, the highest mark, would be landing an impact offensive tackle, which I think was our biggest position beyond quarterback of need. But a B is a really good grade for me to give. I feel like they've done a really nice job bringing in players here.
Bubba, what do you say?
I agree with Matt. I'd put it at, you know, probably a B plus, maybe even an A minus, but at least a B plus. And if you get that offensive line piece or two, you know, and lockdown, and this announcement of Jake Garcia, I mean, I really think it's, we've done probably about as well as we could do.
The offensive tackle pieces, the two offensive linemen we signed out of junior college, who I believe were ranked like 13th, 14th nationally, junior college.
That's correct.
Were either one of those tackles?
That I can't remember, but I do remember they were ranked.
I believe so, Kyle. I'm pretty sure. Bubba, is it Tarpe? Is that how you say his name? I think he is.
Yeah. Tarpe,
right.
I believe you're correct on Tarpe. And then you had Kendarius Small, who was a guard from Southwest Mississippi.
So Tarpe may be an upgrade right there. I'm going to say B plus. If we officially sign Garcia this week, I'll give it an A going into spring ball, and then we'll see how they manage the roster after spring, and we'll reevaluate.
I was debating, and it's so funny. That's the reason I brought this up to you guys, is I've been debating in my head, would I give them a B plus or A minus based on what we were talking about? And I was thinking about the guys saying A minus. Is that my heart? You know, because I love my Pirates. Is that my heart that's saying A minus? Or should I just be safe and give them the B plus? Because A minus, B plus is pretty close anyway. And like you guys said, we know that work is still needs to be done. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'm telling you guys, so far so good. Kyle and I in the pre-show meeting in the green room, we were talking about, Kyle, you made the point. I'll give you credit. These guys still have to come together. You know, we've seen other guys from transfer portal in the past. Sometimes you get the diamond in the rough. Sometimes you get a bust. You get a guy that just wasn't good, and they go, oh, yeah, we'll be glad to give you this guy or this guy, you know. They were not fighting to keep him. So we'll see. But I agree with you guys. I think overall a lot better now than it was at the end of the season. That's stating the obvious. But by the way, want to remind everybody, I know that Brandon said this earlier, tickets go on sale for football February the 5th. So get ready to just a few weeks away. Talk to Coleman Spain, our good friend from the ticket office. So make sure that you get that. And they only have, by the way, you baseball folks, they only have jungle tickets left. So for season tickets are almost sold out for three straight seasons, guys. And so looking forward to that. Back to football. By the way, folks, want to let you know, the Lions won a playoff game, Matt. How about that? They beat the Rams 24-23.
Right.
So that game is just over. How about that?
When was the last time Detroit won a playoff game? I mean, I don't know if anybody has that. I'm sure Johnny
Alexa, Robinson. Alexa, when was the last time the Detroit Lions won a playoff game?
The Lions last won the NFC wildcard today. The Lions defeated the Rams.
Today. Thanks. Thanks, Alexa.
If Johnny Robinson is still listening, I'm sure he knows that off the top of his head.
Yeah.
He's our fat guy. But it's, I mean, I'm guessing it's been
a while,
25 right? Years.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
No, that's what I was thinking. It's been a minute. You're right. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
yeah. According to what I'm seeing,
looking it up right now for you guys, how about this?
You guys hear me?
Oh my gosh. Tonight is the Lions' first playoff win since defeating the Cowboys 38-6 back in 1991, some 33 years ago. I knew it had been a long time, but I didn't know Matt had been that long. 33 years. So you Lions fans, hey, we're happy for you, man.
Almost 33 years.
Yeah, according to what I'm seeing, it's not 92 at the Pontiac Silverdome.
Go ahead, Bubba.
He was going ahead.
It said 92 at the Silverdome against the Cowboys. And I guess,
so Bubba's getting 92. Dave's getting 91. Which one is it?
Let me see. Oh, no, Adam Schefter said.
It could be 91, 92. How about that?
Yeah, 91, 33 years ago. Yeah,
what? Maybe that 91, 92 season yet.
Okay, so 92.
Since the NFL season's a little bit different in that, hard to believe.
That's probably accurate.
Wayne, yeah, if Adam Schefter put it out as 91, I'd say that's accurate. Wayne Fonts, who was the Lions coach, very successful from 88 to 96, he's now 83 years old. Hard to believe.
Wow.
How about we take it a step further on this one since we're doing a little trivia here? Who was the quarterback for that Lions team? Who was the quarterback?
Quarterback.
I think I know who it was, but I'm not 100% sure, but I could take a guess when you're ready, when you guys go.
You go for it, and I'll look it up because I am not going to be able to get that. I should be able to, but I'm
quarterback McQuarterback.
I'm thinking it was Scott Mitchell, a lefty. Right. But I'll go ahead and do that research unless Bob is doing it. But I mean, you're going
with Eric Kramer.
Yeah. I was going to DQ myself because when I was searching that number as far as the playoff record and what year that occurred, I had already seen Eric Kramer.
I forgot that he played.
I certainly remember Eric Kramer, but I don't think I would not have gotten that off the top of my head.
NC I loved him on Seinfeld.
Yeah.
So wait, is that the actual answer or is that a guess? Is it Eric Kramer?
It's Eric Kramer, yeah.
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 Interesting.
Kramer is with the Lions from 91 to 93. Then he moved on to the Chicago Bears 94 to 98. He began his career with the Falcons in 87, then spent three seasons in Canada. Before 3 years with the Lions, five with the Bears, and then 1 year to wrap up his career with the San Diego Chargers in 99.
Wow. I didn't realize he was in the league that long. Now that we're – wow. He was a journeyman, right? Wow. Didn't realize it. But congratulations to the Lions. So Lions get their first, and the Cowboys lost, so – by the way, Matt, I was thinking about you, not that you guys have the weather like this, but the word brutal comes to mind, and I always pick on Semenza. I love that word. But those pictures out of Buffalo having to move the game to Monday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon at 4:30, because it's like a daggone blizzard there, man. It was crazy yesterday.
Good timing with a lot of people off work tomorrow to be able to do that.
Yeah, 4:30 in the afternoon, but they've got going to be a doubleheader, so they had to do that.
I had mixed feelings about that. You know, I'll be honest and call me crazy, but
you want to see the game?
I love watching games in blizzards like that, and it, you know, it's just the natural elements, man. It's part of the game, especially in Buffalo. So I don't. Part of me wanted to see it. You know, probably wouldn't have been the best football, but it would have been kind of fun to watch.
And that game last night with the Chiefs and Dolphins, the fourth coldest game in NFL history, -7, Kyle, 30 below just for the sports objective. So I was like, wow, 30 below and you're playing football. And Matt, as a kid, I remember playing out in my grandparents' backyard and your cousins tackling you and it's like really cold. And just when you get tackled, it feels like asphalt. I can't imagine, like, because it's so cold outside and the grass is like frozen.
Well, you got 30 below. It's more than the grass is frozen. The whole ground is frozen. Your soil temperatures at that point are astronomically low. So it really is like being tackled on asphalt.
I asked Bubba this earlier. I'll ask this to Kyle first and then Dave. Kyle, if you played in that game last night, would you be a sleeve guy? Or a sleeveless guy.
Oh, I would be a sleeve guy. What kind of idiot would go without sleeves? Hey, what are you trying to prove? Like,
there was half a guy. Of those players last night were sleeveless. You know.
Yeah. But why? I mean, you would be able to answer that question better than me. Does it feel restrictive somehow wearing sleeves? And if you're just not used to it, you can't do it. Is that what it is?
I think it's And there was a guy last night they showed in the stands. He had no shirt on. I'm like, there's Kyle, no shirt on, man. And he did a Matt Semenza. I could see him moving. Oh.
Yeah. We'll never know what a Matt Semenza is.
I don't know what Dave, you locked up, but
he said,
I think I would try to give it a go without the sleeves, man. I think I try. Just, you know, it's mind over matter.
But why? Is it more comfortable to play without sleeves?
Yeah, I would hate to play with sleeves on.
So it feels restrictive?
A little bit, yeah. It would to me.
So it's a literal makes you feel restrictive. It's not because you're trying to be tough.
Well, there's a little bit of both, you know.
Well, if you're trying to be tough, you're stupid. It's just stupid. you're already a football player. You're already a football player. We know you're tough. You're out there playing a 30 below. I mean, you look. I ain't got on sleeve. Man, he's got on sleeve. He a pussy. Man, give me guys. Shut up. It's so stupid. If there's a legitimate reason, if it makes you feel restricted, you're not used to playing in them, so you don't feel right. Okay. But if you're doing it to be tough, that's just stupid.
I want to ask now, you Matt. One of the things that's commonly done, as far as Vaseline, is that something that you do?
Oh yeah, Matt does that all the time.
I'm not.
No, I never went that route. I never went that route with the Vaseline. But we got James here.
Not even you were like 12, and you know you got your first Playboy.
Yeah. Well. I won't mention that. I won't mention that. But
hey, look, I want to ask you both.
James says he would give it a go. James commented here,
and yeah, that's
good friend
that's,
James. That's, he that's said definitely he's a, true. There you go, James.
He said
going without. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, shut up, James. You ain't going without sleeves. You're in Illinois right now, acting like you're freezing to death. I seen the damn video wrapped up, sitting there. Freezing to death, shivering, looking like a damn Eskimo. You can go without sleep. Bull crap.
Hey, I have to
Ron, ask the Michelin man, James.
I got to ask you guys, Bubba and Matt. While
is that we're a fat joke, of course, James? There, Bubba. I'm not sure he's going to appreciate that.
Bubba and Matt, give me the coldest, the worst weather you've ever played in. I don't think I've asked you guys this before, and if I have, and you've talked,
I'm sure Matt's going to beat Bubba.
Bubba, yeah, go ahead, Matt. I'll have to take a minute to think about that one.
Probably a playoff game for Bubba, I would think, in the western part of the state. That's my guess for high school. What about you, Matt?
I was actually talking – it's funny. I was talking to Bubba about this yesterday. My senior year in high school, we played on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, man.
It was right around 20 degrees with heavy, heavy winds. And it was freezing. But I'm telling you, this is going to sound crazy. After a few plays, your adrenaline gets going. You really don't feel it. I mean, it probably sounds crazy, but your body temperature adjusts, and and you know you warm up, and you really your adrenaline gets going. You don't really feel it. I mean, I can't speak to like last night. I mean, that's a whole different animal. But I did not wear sleeves that day in the 20 degree weather, Kyle.
You're playing the snow. You're playing the snow there in the New Jersey high school football days. I know, obviously, high school football's over before most of the snow begins. But did you ever play in the snow there in Jersey, Matt?
Never. I never did.
Wow.
Just because it ends earlier in the year. I mean, you know, would have liked to have the opportunity.
What about you, Bubba?
Both of my playoff games, like you mentioned, those were definitely cold there, early to mid November. But I think the coldest that I recall playing in was probably my Pop Warner days. When I was 12, 13 years old, playing in a bowl game down in Garner, as we were playing at Garner High School. And I remember.
Did you play against Scotty McCreary that day?
No, unfortunately, I'm significantly older than Scotty.
Yeah, I guess you would be. You're not significant. How much older? Yeah, I guess you are significantly older than Scotty. Scotty's like 28, 30. 29. Yeah, and you're 41.
Bubba was like 30. Yeah, 40,
yeah, he beat the he greeted the crap out of him. He tackled his ass repeatedly. It was great.
Well, Bubba went back to school.
I believe that was is at least Thanksgiving weekend, maybe even early December, but I think that was the coldest. I remember seems like my dad had gotten me one of the hand warmers or in addition to some of the ones that you can, if they had these back then, where you could you know, shake them up and then keep your hands warm as a quarterback.
Is somebody tapping on their desk?
Yeah, that's me. Sorry.
Okay. Hey, guys, I want to ask you, I had a debate last night. So as a fan, now, we talked about players. As a fan.
You had a date last night? How did it go?
No, I did not. As far as the game last night with Kansas City and the Dolphins being like 7 degrees, 30 below zero, how many of you would watch the game at the stadium?
I would not. The you only way not? I would, no. If it was an, well, if it, all right, if let's just say in pretend world, you know, East Carolina makes the playoffs this coming year, and somehow we're in position to host the first round of the playoffs, which that would never happen. But let's just say we are, and we had some magical cold front come through, and it was that cold here in December. In that situation, I would be there. But that's the only situation I would go to a game that cold.
Well, let me ask you this, Kyle, and I'll ask other guys, and we'll get to James's comment in a second. Would that be a moment where you would say, hey, Dave, I'm going to come up in the and tell Mink Tower, or would you still stay outside?
I'd say, well, I'd try to stay outside. I would try. Matt,
that might be the one time that you join Matt and I in the club level.
Yeah. That would, I think that would be the only chance we'd have to get Kyle up to the club level.
Yeah. And if,
what about you, Bubba?
Oh, Bubba would be there. He would be there with an if there Bubba. Was an icicle sticking out of his ass if East Carolina was playing.
Bubba would probably be
probably the coldest I recall being. Definitely one of the coldest in an East Carolina game was when I was 8 years old. We had a ranked Pittsburgh team on the ropes. I'm beating them 21-0, end up losing the game 47-42. Travis Hunter and Walter Wilson lit it up that day in the passing game. Walter Wilson had 3 receiving touchdowns, went on to play for the San Diego Chargers, but that was at Old Pitt Stadium there on the campus where the basketball arena currently stands. Before they tore it down, maybe there in the early to mid-90s. Perhaps actually the late 90s, because I remember Michael Vick playing there, and then the Panthers moved on to Heinz Field, as it was called then. Old Pitt Stadium torn down there right around the turn of the century in 99 or 2000. But that day there were snow flurries, and I don't know if the temperatures were in the low 20s or what, but it was pretty chilly that day. And I remember my dad, in his East Carolina toboggan and, dressed like the Michelin man, running up and down the aisle, high-fiving everyone when the Pirates were up 3 touchdowns. Do you guys remember who the coach was for Pitt that day? He was also he's someone that is remembered by longtime Pirate fans, probably for another reason.
Coach for Pitt that day.
Yeah. What year?
This was 1989, and had a very successful tenure there, but it came to an end because of a DUI, I think.
Man,
interesting. Not sure.
Johnny
Mike Godfrey.
Mike Godfrey,
a couple years later, he was alongside Ron Franklin calling the Peach Bowl.
You know, that was I'll be honest, guys, that's my favorite college football duo as far as
commentators.
Like Mike Godfrey and Franklin, those guys were awesome.
Yeah.
They were great.
I was going to touch on something with the topic of weather. The two coldest East Carolina games I remember in somewhat recent history was the conference championship game against Houston in 2009 in the freezing-ass rain. Well, it was about 39 degrees and raining the whole game.
December.
Yeah, 39 degrees and cold rain and wind. And the wind chill was below freezing. And then the other one would be another game where it was in the 30s and the wind chill was hit below freezing a couple times. Everybody will remember this one. Not only was it cold, the ending sucked big balls unless you were a UCF fan. The Hail Mary UCF win against East Carolina in 2014. That's the other really cold game I remember in recent history.
Yeah, I was dressed to the – man, I was
– I had on a ski mask, and I often blame myself. At the end of the game, I pulled the ski mask off right before the Hail Mary, and I've often thought if I'd have kept my ski mask on, we'd have won.
Oh, my God, Kyle, how could you do that?
I know.
Kyle, tell our tell our viewers and listeners, obviously, the reaction that you had and then the reaction that, that Jessica had at that one and what you told her.
I so as soon as the dude catches the Hail Mary, I just take off down the damn the ramp, and I'm leaving. I'm gone. I'm so mad. I just take off and I'm ready to go to the gate. I it was one of those things that hit me. It's one of those things that hit me so hard that I didn't need a second to process. Lots of times in those situations, people can't process it. I processed it immediately and was furious and ready to go. I got all the way down to the gate. And I turn around and Jessica's still standing there. And I run back up and I'm like, let's go. And she said, what just happened? I said, we lost the damn football game. That's what just happened. So, yeah, she was kind of just standing there like a lot of other people were. But, that game sucked.
You know, I think and the it was Liberty cold. Bowl. Were you guys at the Liberty
Bowl? Yes.
The Arkansas Liberty Bowl, I've heard stories.
That Liberty Bowl and then also the 94 and 95 Liberty Bowls were very cold.
Yeah, it's so long ago, man, but I feel like it had to be in the 30s that day. That was pretty cold.
But 95?
And he was so sleeping.
I think it was in the 40s, if I remember. I have that game on a DVD, Matt.
Matt. You was said,
but Dave, you locked up there.
Dave froze, but that 2009 game, that was absolutely brutal. My mom just made me a new East Carolina fleece blanket for Christmas, and if you'd have been looking at me, all you could see was my eyes because I had that fleece blanket around my body and my face, and I just remember Brian Bailey on the sideline. I'm Troy Dreyfus and others at Pirate Radio references that Troy D said, I looked at Bailey. I thought he was dead.
By the way, back to the Kansas City game really quick, guys. Did you see where Andy Reid's mustache was frozen?
Yeah, that was pretty disgusting. If you ask me, I mean, I was like, enough with the Andy Reid. Let's go back to Taylor Swift for a minute.
Frozen caterpillar.
I got a frozen caterpillar. She wears short skirts.
Between that and then it was so cold, Patrick Mahomes' helmet actually cracked in half.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty crazy. Wow.
Anytime Taylor Swift is around, Matt has a frozen caterpillar.
Hey,
you are one of a kind.
Thank you,
Kyle. Something that James mentioned was that this wasn't a cold game, but it was a rain game and a mud bowl. That 2000 game where David Garrard, Leonard Henry, and the Pirates.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think one was out cold.
14-9 win at Roberts Stadium.
I think it was cold. It was rainy and in the 40s that day, and that's about as cold as it's going to get in Mississippi for a game. So
James said cold and wet. I just remember the mud aspect of it. I remember Leonard Henry getting hit right at the sideline. I think we talked about this with Leonard when he was on the podcast. But, he got hit right at the sideline and went sliding all the way to the wall of the stadium. But also, for really long time Pirates, that 83 game, just me going back, obviously I was 2 years old at the time, but I remember.
You remember every bit of it.
No, but going back and watching the highlight films of that season, there were tornado warnings in the Hattiesburg area.
Oh, yeah, 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 yes.
They called it the Mud Bowl, and we beat them something. I'm trying to remember if it was – it was 10-6 or 13-6 or something very low scoring, 10-3.
Yeah, for our viewers and listeners, if you aren't aware of it, we have a playlist on our YouTube channel that has old games, and you can find that 83 team documentary, which is in two or three parts on YouTube. And that 83 game, he mentions, there's tornado warnings during that game.
That was nuts. But that's certainly the weather always plays a factor. And hey, I tell you what, if we go to a bowl game, and it's if it's 7 below or 7 degrees or whatever, I'll be there. How about you guys? Maybe the Fenway Bowl. I'll be there.
Oh, if it's Fenway, I'll be there for sure. You can count on that.
No doubt about it.
That was brutal weather this year, and one of the reasons why I kicked myself for picking SMU. And just like the following day, I think it was when Rutgers took down Miami.
Yeah, I need to go and see who won Pick'em. I have not done that yet. Now that college football season's over, I need to go see who won bowl Pick'em. I'm gonna have all my wife has all the data there in her phone of who picked who and what the spreads were. So maybe I'll get a chance to do that this week, and we can find out who was the bowl Pick'em champion, and the winner gets $2 million.
No doubt, I would. I tell you what, that would be great if I could ever win that one, but I didn't. I know for a fact I didn't win, Kyle. So
how do you know?
This already came out. The bowl Pick'em?
No, our bowl Pick'em on the show, Dave.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about another one we did. Okay.
No, I didn't. I never registered for that one. No, I'm talking about the one here on the show. You know that we did the two specials on the one all our viewers know about. Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah, that would be nice to know.
Yeah. I'll see if I can get those results.
So while we have a chance, because we're going to wrap this thing up, we promised Bubba we'd keep it as short as possible. Big-time retirements. How about Nick Saban? You have Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll, three major coaches between college and football. So I just want to get your thoughts, guys, on that. Incredible.
Can we get that sound clip again, Bubba? I don't know.
It is incredible.
There you go. No, I mean, definitely. It was interesting how it all kind of went down over the course of 24 hours. And the Saban surprised me. I did not anticipate that at all. Like, I thought he would go for at least a few more years. But I got to say, I love the hire of Washington's coach. I cannot say his name the right way. DeBoer, is that how you say it, Bubba?
Yeah, DeBoer. Kalen DeBoer.
Kalen DeBoer. I mean, that guy, if you look at his record throughout his coaching career, he is a tremendous coach. And but it seemed like an odd fit going from Washington down to Alabama.
Yeah, last time a coach did that didn't work out too well.
Yeah, exactly. So very surprising.
That was the most surprising. The other two didn't surprise, but Belichick, you know, I mean, that was a foregone conclusion. And Pete Carroll, not a surprise, really, when you think about it. And but, yeah, definitely Saban. But if you think about it, he was always going to – he wanted to leave on top, and he didn't want to be that guy that maybe had an 8-4, 9-3. Okay, we're going to talk to Coach Saban, and he, quote-unquote, retires. So I think he wanted to leave on top. I mean, they were so close to being in the national championship game again. So DeBoer is what I understand is a real charming, charismatic person, very good recruiter. So he'll do a great job in Alabama. And I also think, by the way, guys, how much of it do you think with the NIL transfer portal and now with Alabama is going to have Oklahoma and Texas? If their task for to win the SEC was not daunting enough, they have two more brand name teams that are coming in the league.
Right. Two things about the Saban retirement from me. First, does anybody follow? I don't know. I guess Bubba, you're probably the biggest TikToker besides me on the show here. Do you follow Willie from Alabama on TikTok?
I don't believe so, but I'll go ahead.
If any of our viewers know Willie from Alabama on TikTok, he's a different cat, and he was very emotional with Nick Saban's retirement. He was crying profusely. It was great standing in the yard with no shoes on, crying about it. Was it was it's not a gimmick. It's Willie really is Willie. That's what makes it so good. And then his buddy, who's always interviewing him, he goes, Willie? But anyway, if anybody, you guys got to find that on TikTok, follow him. He's great. But
I do follow Willie on TikTok, yeah. But I had not seen that. I'll check it out. But saw some other interaction here recently, you know, leading into the playoff game against Michigan with Willie. That was
don't give a shit about nothing but the Tide.
Yeah.
He's great. But besides that, I don't give two shits about Nick Saban. I'll stand by my statement on Facebook. If anybody wants to see my statement on Facebook, go read it. Screw Nick Saban. I didn't like him when he was coaching. I don't like him now that he's retired. So it's like when you hate somebody and they die and they go, well, you know, you hate to speak ill of the dead. No, if I don't like you when you're alive, I don't like you when you're dead. And I didn't like you when you were coaching. I don't like you when you retired. So screw Nick Saban. He was never did anything to help the quote unquote group of five of college football. Always spoke of separation. Always did everything he could to really, in my opinion, the only good thing I think, you know, I suppose he supported UAB and didn't like when they destroyed their football program or attempted to. So I'll give him credit for that. But besides that, I was never a Saban fan, and so I really don't care that he's retired. Doesn't matter to me.
All right. I guess that's Matt or Bubba. Do you care to chime in?
I mean, in terms, well, the other one, you know, just to mention Belichick for a second, I mean, you know, I think it was time, you know, the guy had a tremendous run in New England for many years.
But, oh, yeah.
I think his time came to an end. And once Brady moved on from New England, he was never able to have that same success without, you know, a star quarterback. And, but to me, that doesn't take away his greatness as a coach. I mean, that guy, going back to his time as an assistant with the New York Giants in the 80s, I mean, tremendous defensive coordinator. And you're probably not going to see another run in the history of the NFL like the Patriots had for 20 years under Belichick and Brady. So great coach.
Yeah, the Patriots jumped the shark after Brady left. That was for sure.
Don't give a
damn
about nothing.
Blitz, Willie. Hey, Willie.
Oh, man.
So, but as far as Belichick is concerned, no, that did not surprise me. That seemed like it was inevitable, but I was like Matt. The Saban news did surprise me. Yes, they were coming off a very grueling season, as he referenced in his 25-minute sit-down interview with Reese Davis. It would have been interesting had they not rebounded the way they did from their early season struggles, you know, even when they were still winning games, you know, had they gone 8-4 or something of that nature this year, would have Nick Saban hung it up, or would he have had to come back for one more year? Because, yeah, he didn't go out on top necessarily, but he still made it to the playoff and had a heck of a year, a year that most people did not think he would have after they had that close call in Tampa against South Florida.
Did anybody see the TikTok? Again, I'm on TikTok probably more than anybody else on here. Did you guys – first of all, did anybody see the video of Debo Twinney at the Clemson basketball game with the black eye?
No, I did not.
No, I did not.
He had a very bad black eye, and there was somebody posted a video on Twitter saying that that's a, you know, where his black eye was and what it looked like, whatever side of the face it was on. It's a very common thing to go out in public like that. It's a symbol that you've joined the Illuminati. So this guy's theory is that Debo has joined the Illuminati. That way Clemson's football will be successful. So he predicts Clemson to win the national championship next year because Debo has joined the Illuminati.
That was tremendous.
Thank you. Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate that.
Johnny Gardner.
Bubba's getting slap happy there with the.
That laugh always cracks me up there.
We're gonna have to get Bubba one of those. Dave, we're gonna have to get Bubba one of those little sound effect things like Cornette has.
Yeah, I actually have the Rodecaster Pro 2, the board right here, and it has the has that where you can load in.
Oh, sound cool! Effect. That's good. We need that. We need like fart sounds. We need you know some of Bubba's that he saved. We need a you know the my rant about Rudolph. We'll do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I've got like there's about. I think it's 16 presets I have up here.
We'll do the one where what's his name? Thought McKenzie was your granddaughter.
Was that Dakota Marshall?
Sounds right. Bubba, was that Dakota?
Casey Ross.
Casey Ross.
Casey okay. Ross. Okay. All right. Well, guys, we're getting to that 80-minute mark. I know we're tired. Do you guys have anything before we go? I think it's been a really good show. Appreciate everybody tuning in tonight, obviously, with a transfer portal. Baseball, by the way, Media Day is going to be a week from tomorrow on the 22nd. So I'll be there, and our good buddy Alan Vick, I'm sure, will be there. But we'll take care of that, and looking forward to the comments of Cliff Godwin and the season starting. Hard to believe, Bubba, isn't it a month away? Off the top of my head, it's about a month away or a little over a month away. For baseball season.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to remember if it's the 17th, 18th, 19th, or 16th, 17th, 18th, yeah. Something like that. But yeah. Dave, before we get out of here, really appreciate the support of Ed Watkins, former East Carolina offensive lineman, Ed Watkins Marine. Ed Watkins Marine, been in business for years now, highly successful. Two locations to serve you in the greater Charlotte area, Denver and Cornelius, North Carolina. They have fishing boats, pleasure boats, pontoon boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, engines, UTVs, and more. They have all the brands that you'd be looking for, C-Pro, Suncatcher, Pontoons and Tritoons, Stingray, Yamaha, Suzuki, Mercury, Vexus Bass Boats, Explore skiffs and more. So, you know, whether you're looking for a new boat or to repower your existing boat, visit Ed Watkins Marine and they can help you meet all your boating needs. Visit them online at edwatkinsmarine.com or you can see them obviously in person at either of those locations or give them a call at their Denver store. They can be reached at 704-483-BOAT. Or in Cornelius, 704-498-4985.
No doubt, and edwatkins.com is where you can go and check that out. Man, that great website, by the way, Ed. Appreciate you very much for the sponsorship and glad to have you aboard. And if you guys want to be a sponsor, then hit us up on our Gmail account, right, Bubba? They can just email us, thesportsobj@gmail.com, and you can find us anywhere. You can hit us up on any of the social media platforms as well. We'd love to have you aboard. And there's a lot of us that, a lot of folks I know in the Empire Nation and beyond that would love to be part of one of the fastest growing podcasts, but certainly the number one podcast in Pirate Nation.
That's right.
Yeah. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've eclipsed 1,100 subscribers there now. And, aim to reach that 2,000 plateau and get there and beyond in 2024. And when you click subscribe, be sure to click that notification bell and all, so that way anytime we go live or upload new content, you're alerted on your device.
And if you guys will get us to 2,000 listeners by the end of March,
what are you going to do?
I'm not doing anything. If you guys will get us to 2,000 subscribers. 2,000 subscribers by the end of March on YouTube, Bubba will wear a dress on the air.
Oh my God. I thought you were
going to say, who do you think I am, Tony Collins?
Well, I didn't say you'd be naked, just a dress on the air.
Yeah.
Hey, I thought you were going to say, Collins, you're going to be on top of a building until we get 2,000 listeners.
2,000, you mean 2,000 subscribers on YouTube?
Subscribers, yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh my God, the old radio gimmick.
Yeah.
And then they take them off the building after the morning show's over every day.
Yeah.
And just leave something sitting up there that looks like a person sitting there, like a tent. Yeah. Nah, stupid crap.
There you go. Ron James says the best damn podcast for East Carolina sports. Thank you, James.
That's right.
By the way, that picture you have up on the screen, our good friend Pays kind of has that side tilt thing. And I just noticed that James does the same thing or similar.
The opposite direction. He's got more of a, he's got a downward tilt, whereas Pays is more of a upward tilt.
Yeah.
James and Pays, but just notice the tilt tonight.
Yeah, he's a very tilty kind of person. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with an insult for James. I got nothing. I got nothing. I'll just go, James, you suck. How about that? You're tilting head. Straighten your head up.
Did James move to like Chicago or something?
He's in Illinois. His girlfriend's in Illinois, and he's Chicago. She lives in Aurora, and I'm telling all his business here on Sports Judge. And he's having a prolonged Christmas visit now, going on about 3 weeks. Apparently, little James, the school authorities I hear are looking for his son there in Mississippi. But I think David's probably going home tomorrow. But he's had a prolonged visit there with his lady friend there in the state of Illinois in the middle of a snowstorm in the greater Chicago area. Yeah, I think he's going to eventually move to Chicago, it looks like.
I'm starting
those rumors now.
Was it Aurora where Wayne and Garth lived?
Indeed, yes. That is indeed the home of Wayne and Garth from Wayne's World. Shwing!
Yeah. James, you need a licorice dispenser, a Twizzler dispenser on what?
And hey Matt, how about in that movie? You remember the best car ever?
Swing.
The AMC Pacer, baby. What do you think, Semenza? With that Pacer, and you guys sing Bohemian Rhapsody to the top of your lungs.
Favorite line is, I can't remember if it's Wayne's World, if it's in Wayne's World 1 or Wayne's World 2, but I think my favorite line. There's a couple parts, but one that I remember is Wayne, Garth all of a sudden just out of the blue. Wayne, do you find Bugs Bunny attractive when he dresses up like a girl and play a girl bunny?
Yeah, it was the first one.
Yeah.
It's sad that I know that, but I'm pretty sure it was the first one. I haven't seen those movies in forever, but James says, laughing out loud, ha-ha.
What did he say before that? I missed it.
It's to hide my other three chins.
Well, you know what, James? It's a hell of a move. You can do one of two things. You can lift your head up and try to hide it that way, or you can tilt it to the side, get the camera a little high. You know, there's two ways to do that. I do the same thing. You always got to try to hide the double chin as much as possible. Unless you're Bubba and Matt and don't have the double chin issue, then, you know, you're in good shape.
I wonder, when James first met his girlfriend, she makes me feel kind of funny, like when I used to climb the roof in gym class.
The rope, yeah.
The rope,
climb the rope to the roof in gym class.
Makes me feel kind of funny, like when I used to climb the rope in gym class. You got to do it like Garth said it. James don't get any of these references. He might. I don't know how much James knows about. James is very weird with movies. Sometimes he'll get the references and sometimes he won't. He watches a lot of movies, though.
He's saying the three chins, that's why he tilts.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I understood it from the beginning.
A tilt. Tilt, baby, tilt. All right. Anything before we go, guys? I know
if you notice, Matt is also tilting.
I'm tilted? No, I'm straight
yeah,
on.
Yeah, no, baby. You're tilted. You're bullshit. Look at you right there. You got one shoulder lower than the other. Your head's slightly cocked to one side.
Yeah, but you know, you can see the whole face, though. You know, you can't see it. You see it. You see a whole face.
Well, yeah, you can see you're still tilted. You're still tilted. For that matter, Bubba's slightly tilted.
Bubba's got a slight tilt, you know.
Where's some head tilting mofos?
I also have my head slightly tilted. And it does not do a good job of hiding my double chin.
Oh, my God. Tilting on the sports objective.
Yes.
Who knew?
I put my hands up on my hip. When I tilt, you tilt. We tilt. I don't know.
There you go. It's a great hip-hop song, I'm sure. So we talked about baseball tickets. Jungle tickets are the only thing left. Coleman also wanted to let everybody know about basketball season. For the basketball season, the single tickets. The conference on sale, And we told you again that football tickets go on sale February 5th. And I have a feeling that we're quick thing. We'll get out of here. Do you, what would you put the over under for the number of season tickets sold this year for football?
Well, you're still coming off of a 2-10 season.
I know.
App State is your premier non-conference home game. You got Navy coming here, which always draws. I'm trying to think if there any other draws for home games. Temple's coming. I like playing Temple, but I don't know that that's really a draw. So you got two draws, App and Navy. I think there'll be some excitement. I say status quo, 14,000.
All right, so you take the under. I'm going to set the bar at 15,000. You take the under. What say you, Bubba?
I guess in 22, we finished like 15-8, something just shy of 15-9. Last year, it was a little over 15. I'll say that we're right around that 15 mark again. I think with the excitement over what we've done in the portal and the significantly improved, or what we think will be significantly improved. We know it's going to be improved. It's just a matter of how much on offense. And I think I'll be surprised. I thought we would have a decent drop off after what took place this past season, but I think we'll find a way, especially with, you know, App coming to town. I think we'll sell around 15.
So you're a push.
Yeah,
pretty much even the same. Okay, what about you? Yeah.
I think there's some renewed enthusiasm with the hire of John David Baker, and you know, obviously bringing in some nice quarterback additions here. So I'll say we hit 15.
That's my thinking, but I could be wrong. But that's why I put the over under for 15,000. So I have those kind of crazy debates in my head, and I just keep them to wait for the show to ask you guys.
And then if you're going to set a very early over under as far as a win total, looking at this in a couple different ways, as far as Vegas, I'd say Vegas would probably, I don't know if they'd go with maybe like 5.5 or something.
That's exactly what was in my head, Bubba.
Yeah.
Right at bowl eligibility.
Whereas
if Vegas is going to set it at 5.5, I would take the over.
I agree that if I was setting the over under, I'd probably go 6.5. But
push.
But I could it couldn't be a push, but
I would take the push.
Yeah. On 6.5?
Yes. I know you can't do that. I know you have to take the over or the under, but we're not in Vegas. I wouldn't touch it.
You wouldn't touch it.
So it would be a push for me.
Right.
Mike Houston has to win 8.
No way.
He has to.
No way. If he gives us bowl eligible, we won't fire him. Unless it's backwards. Unless we start off well and then go to shit at the second half of the season and there's no reason for it, like the quarterback went down. But if we're 6-6, and let's say it's because we're getting better as the season goes, because look, this is a brand new offense. We got a lot of nice pieces, but they got to come together. I would not be surprised if we start off the season a little disappointing. Maybe we even start off 1-2. But so let's say that happens. And then we win, you know, 4 out of our last 5 to get bowl eligible, to get to 6-6. I think it would be pretty ignorant with that momentum and the amount of players we'd have coming back to make a change.
What about you, man? I'm just sticking with my, for me and with him in year 6, I'm sticking to my guns, and I'd like to see him win 8.
I'd like to see him win 8 too, but do you think he would be fired for less than 8 wins?
Oh, I don't know if he'd be fired. I think a lot of it depends on like how we would actually play on the field, but that's my, I guess what you would say is that's my personal.
So you're taking the over.
I'm saying for him as a coach in his 6th year at East Carolina, he needs to win 8 games.
Matt, you're taking the over. Expectations with his schedules, year 6, that we should be.
I think it's totally doable to win 8 games. No,
it is. But at the same time, all those teams that we're supposedly going to beat, are looking at East Carolina penciling in a win. I mean, Old Dominion was a bowl team. Appalachian State won the Sun Belt or played for the Sun Belt. Did they win or did they just play for it? I don't remember. They just played for it.
They played for it, lost to Troy.
Right. So they played for the Sun Belt Championship. Old Dominion was a bowl team.
And they have a quarterback back.
Exactly. So that's just the non-conference schedule. You get into the conference schedule, you know, we lost all those teams pretty much except the ones we didn't play. So, you know, this whole the schedule is so easy. Liberty, by the way, guys, I don't know if you guys noticed, they played Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl or whatever the hell BCS Bowl that was. So, yep. You know, Liberty's pretty good. So there's another non-conference game for you. So this whole easy schedule thing.
Well, easier. I'm not saying it's a cakewalk, but.
My expectations, realistic expectations, I think we should, with what all we have coming back, you know, Matt said he would, 8 is what he would expect to make him happy. I'm assuming that's regular season. I would take 6, 7, and 5. I would be satisfied. But at this point, after 7 and 5, Houston would need to compete for a conference championship the following year.
With all the new pieces, and given where we would be coming from with the 2-10 record a year ago, that's why I think Vegas will set it at 5.5, probably, especially since you have that FCS game against Norfolk State, and that FCS game is why I would personally, you know, set mine at 6.5, because that would mean that you take care of business in that one the way you have to. And that would put you going 6-5 against FBS competition to get to that 7 wins to get the over.
Yeah, I would take the I'll take the over. I still think our worst possible scenario would be just barely bowl eligible, somewhere between 6-8. I'll have to look at the schedule.
Our worst possible scenario? No way. Our worst possible scenario is one of these two quarterbacks transfers out, and then the other one gets injured, and we go 2-10. So, I mean,
no, I understand. I don't see that. What I'm saying is, I don't see that happening. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, you also didn't see last year happening. So, no, 6-6 is not our worst possible scenario. Absolutely not.
But you're saying do you think that's our best?
No, I don't think that's our best. No, I would sit the over under about where Vegas would at 5.5, and I would take the over.
Okay.
If the over is 6.5, I wouldn't touch it. After what I saw last year, you got to show me first. I think the potential is there. I think we could be a very good football team and win 6 games, because I think it's going to take a while for this all to come together. I mean, maybe it will. Maybe it'll be a Lincoln Riley type situation where we're clicking on all cylinders on offense in game one. But my gut tells me it's going to take it a couple games for it all come together. And, you know, we may look like doo-doo against Old Dominion and, you know, then figure it out in the second half against App State and beat them. It could be something like that. So it may be later in the season. That's kind of why I'm thinking we could still be a 6-win team and feel pretty good about things if you go win 4 or 5 in a row to end the season.
And although a lot of people don't like playing that game against Norfolk State, given our current situation, that's awesome that we play Norfolk State week 1.
Yep.
Because we get a chance to get the offense rolling a bit and hopefully, you know, be clicking when you head to Norfolk in week 2, and then obviously you got App State and Liberty to wrap up non-conference play in games 3 and 4.
I mean, you could easily be 1-2, you know, because things ain't clicking right, then go to Liberty and, you know, boat race them. You know, think of the Marshall game where it wasn't a boat race, but it was that dramatic comeback in 2021. It could be a very similar situation to that, where everything just finally clicks. I hope that's not the case. I hope we start off 3-0. I got a feeling it's going to take a few weeks for it to come together, and then it will. And we'll probably be a good football team by the middle of the year.
Well, as long as it's better than much better than 2-10.
Oh, it will be. It will be, unless there's major injuries.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. All right, guys, we're at that over the hour and a half mark. Do you guys have anything before we go?
Nope.
I'm all set, man.
All right, I appreciate you guys very much. Looking forward to a great season. Again, get your tickets, ecupirates.com, or you can give them a call on Tuesday. I think they're off tomorrow, but 1-800-DIAL-ECU to get your football tickets, your basketball or baseball for sure. Thanks to Kyle, Matt, Bubba. Let's get out of here. As always, you've been listening and watching The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.